Hello, and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Tal Mandelbaum Ben Moshe. Hello. Today on our show, we'd like to talk about human rights. Human rights is something that we should all have, but that's not always the case in today's society. So we'd like to understand, what are human rights and how can we make it so that everyone, including our children, will have them? Tal, please. Yeah, something very interesting about human rights is that at the center of the debate is Israel, meaning that Israel is accused more than any country in the world of the violation of human rights. Even though that we know that compared with many other countries around us, and in general, we do a pretty good job in protecting human rights. It's a part of our constitution. And we see in the United Nations, Israel is accused dozens of times more than any other country, even than the darkest dictatorships. And in general, the accusations against Israel, the connection between human rights and Israel, this is something that really interests us. How do you see this? That all of mankind is looking at Israel, that's obvious, because it comes as a result of the people of Israel being a special people. It's not a nationality, but it's an ideology that in the past used to be very conspicuous. And this is an ideology determined by Abraham, our patriarch. And this is why he's called patriarch, because he's not like the father of any other nation that came from some family that grew over time. But Israel is a collection of different, as if random people that connected according to their ideology. That this ideology actually says that we're all equal, that all of us have to be connected, that all of us have to be in love towards one another. Love another as thyself. One shall help his friend, and so on and so forth. Meaning, the rights there weren't on a level where everyone demanded to receive what I deserve, but everyone demanded of themselves to help society to be as homogeneous as possible, despite the differences that exist between everyone, between all the members of society. And therefore, because Israel was so conspicuous in this respect, in those days, 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, or 2,000 years ago, and in general, throughout all the generations, throughout the entire process that they went through in the European exile, and in the Arabian countries, where everyone were practically barbarians, what human rights? People had no human rights. People's lives were practically worthless. And in Israel, on the contrary, everyone's life had great value and rights, and Judaism as a whole is based on everyone being equal. We never had masters. Everyone was equal. There was never someone that can kill someone else. There were always courts. And no one judged things according to a person's wealth or other privileges or what family does he belong to. But each person per se, this is what it says in the Torah, and this is how people really lived their life. The only thing according to which a person was respected was, is he a wise disciple? Regardless whether he's rich or poor, but he's first. If I'm rich and I have a daughter, I'm not looking for another rich person, but I'm looking for a wise disciple, for my daughter to marry a wise disciple. This was truly the highest value of the nation because of the education, because of the matter of love another as thyself being the great rule of the Torah that was kept by the nation. And therefore, human rights were kept according to the upper rule. And there was no need to do it through courts or torture, like in other nations, or through a legal system by force. But it was all really in a very rational, beautiful way, stemming from each and everyone's desire. The people of Israel existed as long as this existed. And when we lost our brotherly love, and we fell from that degree into unfounded hatred, the hatred of others, no longer brothers, but others, because you can't hate your brothers. Hating your brothers actually means hating your fellow man. So, as a result of that, we finished with the entire matter of rights, and it still did exist, but nonetheless, it existed in a very crooked way. And still, to this day, in Israeli society, maybe not taking recent years into consideration, since the establishment of the State of Israel and on, since we started working according to foreign laws, building a judicial system and a government and all the government offices according to foreign laws. But say up until the mid-20s of the 20th century, we still somehow existed according to those ideals that always existed among the people of Israel. I want to read from the Declaration of Independence, and it's interesting what it says about human rights. The State of Israel will be open for Jewish immigration and for the ingathering of the exiles. It will foster the development of the country for the benefit of all its inhabitants. It will be based on freedom, justice, and peace, as envisaged by the prophets of Israel. It will ensure complete equality of social and political rights to all its inhabitants. So we're talking about a vision of justice and freedom here, because the forefathers who established this country 70 years ago, they all came from yeshivas. They all understood this existing foundation. I'm not even talking about the wisdom of Kabbalah, but even in the pshat, the literal meaning. And of course they understood that there you have the true, correct rules. And still among them, there were many social inclinations, left-wing, different kinds of left-wing inclinations that started accepting the English mandate, the Turkish mandate, and to this day we have many such laws that come from there. This is interesting, meaning they're our original laws, and by using them, when we used them, we were able to keep human rights, and many of the inclination towards human rights that come from other nations don't really help us keep them. So why do the nations look at us this way? Do they somehow understand that we have this ability to realize human rights? No, the nations look at us this way because they blame us. They're not coming to learn the good things from us. They're coming to blame us for the bad things that exist among them. This is their attitude towards us. And it exists in them subconsciously, where they think that Israel is capable of giving them a method of correction and an example for connection and equality and human rights. Yes, subconsciously they have such a feeling that it can come from Israel and that Israel isn't bringing it, isn't giving or serving it. And therefore, they accuse us. So, I think it's really important that we as Israelis understand the difference between these two approaches, where the original approach that the people of Israel used in the past that has true potential, and the approach that we're trying to use today that doesn't lead us to the place that we want to go with the rights and everything. Where your approach sounds amazing, that it's not that someone owes me, but how can I contribute? How will we as Israelis understand this difference? Because today, we don't even know about the approach you're talking about. It all depends on the dissemination of the wisdom of Kabbalah that has to develop and reach the entire Israeli nation and later on the entire world. That if we take it upon ourselves to realize it, then we'll know how can we keep human rights and also from the heart, from the essence of Judaism and within the Israeli nation and within the Israeli people in the diaspora and for all nations in general. Trying to look at myself and understand where is my approach incorrect, what I got from society. It's an approach that says that you have to correct things by force. It's an approach that other people, they're the ones that have to change. Something's wrong about them. It's an approach that says that I know what's right. I'm the enlightened person. Meaning there are many basic concepts that became rooted in our perception when we think about justice and peace and how to make peace in the world. It really influences how we perceive things. Yeah. So I want to understand, how do I clean myself of this lie that I'm living with? And I reach a much more productive, correct approach. At first, simply start studying you as an activist in a human rights organization, especially in Israel and especially among Jews and maybe even among women or children, I don't know. There are other sub-levels there. So you have to come and study. What does it really mean, according to the Jewish, true Jewish sources, our root Jewish sources? What are human rights within a nation and the world, for all factions? What is equality? What kind of equality can there be among everyone? Because we were created on purpose, unequal, by nature, in order for us to bring ourselves to equality. So I want to ask about a factor that I think is maybe one of the biggest obstacles standing in our way of reaching this. Today, human rights became something very political. Sure, and this is where it ends. Right, but still, this war, especially between the right and the left, it's alive and kicking. Yeah. It's nourished by it. And so the left part of the political map, they as if represent human rights and so on, it's all a lie. And that's it. We saw that when they were in power, they didn't care for human rights more than the right did whatsoever. So what is this lie that's so immersed in our consciousness that, because it has nothing to do with right or left, what does it have to do with then? It has to do with our connection with God. It's not something religious. What then? It's when we're connected with the upper nature. This is Elohim, God. In Gematria, it equals nature. What does it mean that it doesn't belong to right or left? It doesn't belong to right or left or religion. We see that it doesn't work there. So what does it belong to, human rights? What can sustain such a world? Human rights means to reach justice and integrity according to what the upper nature determines for mankind. And the upper nature is what? The Creator, the upper force. The upper force is the upper force of nature that we have to study, that we have to draw, that we have to crown over us. And if I think that I'm a very good, enlightened person who believes in the good and right things, among the right group of people, how can I identify that something about me has to change? Because you're saying that it has nothing to do with this. How are you any better? What makes you a better person if you don't identify that you're immersed in bad? meaning in order to start changing something, we need the recognition that all of us are in it. True, and therefore we have to start with the dissemination of the wisdom of Kabbalah that explains to people how is the world built, how is human society built, how do we have to discover where we really are, and to what extent do we have to change, and by what powers do we correct ourselves, up to the point where we bring ourselves to an ideal form, manner, where everyone's equal and everyone has the same rights. Besides the Jews? Yeah. Why? Because Jews, their only right is to bring everyone to their rights. Sounds like an obligation. Yeah. Before we talk about the Jews, I want to ask about something you said. You said that human rights is the ability to realize, this beautiful vision of human rights. It doesn't have to do with right, left, or religion. Right. And I asked, what does it have to do with? You said, it has to do with being connected with upper force in nature. You have to study it, draw it to ourselves, and crown it over us. Yeah. So suppose this is the direction that you're giving us. Accordingly, how would you define human rights? According to the wisdom of Kabbalah, suppose me as an individual, I'm a human being. What rights do I have according to this worldview? It's the opposite to what we think. Because today, we're talking about rights in terms of what I deserve. And so does everyone if it's human rights. Yeah, what everyone deserves. Yeah, what I deserve and all other people and so on and so forth. And according to your perception. According to my perception, schut, privilege in Hebrew, comes from the word zakut, purity. The extent to which a person rises above his ego, becomes purer, which means what? That he rises above his egoistic desire to rule, to be more than everyone, and so on. And everything he can by nature. The more he rises above his nature of reception, to receive from everyone, what we call exercising your rights in our world, and to reach the desire to give, to bestow, to benefit others, that in that a person feels his virtue, his privilege, in benefiting others and not in receiving from everyone. If through our education and the upper reforming force will reach that, then we'll reach a level where we will all exercise our rights, meaning we'll be on such a degree of purity that the upper force, the Creator, God, shall dwell among us, shall fulfill all the void spaces among us. It's the very opposite to the current approach, meaning that actually my right is to care for others and not for them to care for me. It's completely inverted to our current perception. And I think that it's really not easy for us to make this change. We have no choice. Miss, we have no choice. We have to do it. I read this article written by Bala Sulam called The Wisdom of Kabbalah and Philosophy, and he describes there in a parable where there's a situation that King Solomon, who is the wisest of all people, who, of course, kept all these things that you explained about, and that actually Ashmedai brought him down from his throne, whose attitude was the complete opposite, and he claimed that he's Solomon and that he possesses the truth, and Solomon actually wasn't able to convince anyone that he is the true Solomon. And Bala Sulam says that one of the reasons for which it happened was that Solomon's wisdom was so deep, so hard to perceive, takes so many years to study, that no one could identify it. But philosophy, or what Ashmedai explained, it was much easier for us to explain it. It seemed nicer, more convenient. Yeah. Are we to some extent in this situation where it's hard for us to perceive, accept the good, true thing? But eventually we're reaching a state where all philosophy and science and the wisdoms and religions and everything else are eventually going bankrupt. And therefore, there's hope that we will really be able to present the wisdom of Kabbalah as King Solomon, Kohelet, presented himself, and he was understood by those people that, like back then, you have the Sanhedrin. Yeah, only those who studied his wisdom for years could understand. So, the very same way, gradually, we'll be able to do it. That people will want to go through such a deep change in their perception, but they themselves, they're already despaired of what they have in this world, on the one hand, where there's no option, there's no way of running away from suffering, and what equality, what rights can we give people here? But that we barely survive, and we'll live in such problems that will really raise our children in sorrow. And therefore, this is eventually what will lead us to a state where we will listen to Solomon. The way I see it, then probably there has to be some kind of perception that it has nothing to do with politics or who are you, where did you come from, but it's about human nature itself, that people will understand that it's about changing their essence. Yeah, that's not simple. I want to go back to the question we started out with, that everyone blames Israel for the violation of human rights and other rights. On the other hand, many Jews, they're involved in human rights organizations, and they're specifically against Israel. Part of them, not all of them. I saw an organization of rabbis for human rights, and it's known that Jews are drawn to this realm. And if we want to really explain these things to the world, what are we supposed to tell them? We want to tell them that Judaism is entirely based on keeping human rights, the true Judaism, namely the wisdom of Kabbalah, the spiritual Judaism, where a person rises above his corporeal egoistic nature and starts truly working for the benefit of others, not simply with pretty words, but according to what the wisdom of Kabbalah demands of the person. And only those who study the wisdom of Kabbalah receive from it the forces to work above their own nature. And when a person acts, then he really acts for the benefit of others. Only those people, and everyone has to go back to that, and everyone has to rise to a degree like we were on before the exile, to redemption, where the difference between galut, exile, and redemption, geula, it's the revelation. There's the letter Aleph in Geula, as opposed to Galut. The letter Aleph is the champion of the world, meaning that the Creator is revealed, and everyone has to reveal Him for that force of bestowal and love called the Creator to dwell among us, Elohim, and then everyone will have equal rights from that force, and no one will feel deprived in any way, but that truly everyone's equal, and we will enjoy equality, and not that, God forbid, someone wants to be above others. So, probably we won't tell them all of this, but if we'll tell them what you said, we'll be blamed less. If we'll start explaining it to the nations of the world in the broadest possible way, if we'll start educating the people of Israel towards it, if we will start working on it, on our strong dissemination, then I think that in our times, with all the external conditions that mankind has, we have a very good chance of showing everyone what does a struggle for human rights really mean for each and every person. So suppose we're the state of Israel and we want to change our line of explanation. And now we're in the foreign ministry discussing how to do it. We tell you, Dr. Lightman, we see that our current line of explanation doesn't work. We heard that you have a very new and revolutionary worldview, please tell us, what can we tell the world about keeping human rights? Today the world sees us as one of the most human right violating countries in the world. So what do we tell them about this new perception of human rights? First of all, I'd explain to the people of Israel that the nations of the world treat each other equally, and therefore they don't really blame each other in violating human rights. Whereas regarding Israel, they have a very clear, true inner feeling. It's not that they're acting. It's true hate. They feel that Jews have to be different, that they have to be on a different level of human rights, on a different level, and they're not there. And therefore, towards us, they have a corresponding attitude that we're not keeping human rights the way we should. This you're explaining here, inside of Israel. And therefore, we have to bring ourselves not to the degree of the nations of the world, where we're doing even more than they are in this respect. Even today. Okay, where then? To the degree that we're supposed to be on, both according to what the wisdom of Kabbalah says, and also it will be perceived correctly by the nations of the world, and then at least no one will accuse us of anything in this respect. And what would you do with the accusations against Israel regarding the violations of human rights nowadays? I'd explain to them, why do they hate us? Why do they treat us the way they do? And where are they right? And what do we have to do correspondingly? And for them to help, in half a minute, our time's up. Last question. Human rights, on the more advanced level that you're talking about, that you say that also existed at the root of the Jewish people, but let's look forward. What rights does a person have in tomorrow's world? The right everyone has to help others. Dr. Leitman, undoubtedly a revolutionary perception. Thank you very much. Thank you, Tal. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.